This is football. I'm Kevin Clark. I just saw something, and if you're a Bears fan, just close your ears if that's possible. If you're driving, pull over. I just saw something that made me so sad. That Jordan Love has 30 touchdowns in the season. That's more than any Bears quarterback in history. And I don't know, like, I know that's possible because I've seen the numbers. I don't know how it's possible in the context of the Bears history to have not accidentally had a guy throw for 30 touchdowns, 3,000 yards. Like, all the things that in the passing boom, like, guys accidentally did, they just backed into it. That just never happened with the Bears. Never. It just, I don't know. Like, there's all sorts of things I could break down here except to say I don't know how the Bears exist. All right, anyway, I'm not going to do that. We can do a little bit of Justin Fields a little bit later. That decision is becoming more spicy and more clear, I think. But that's not one of the things I had planned. We're doing five most important things of week 17. I'm going to start very quickly with number one. And that's that the refs are not corrupt. They're just bad. Let's start here. If the refs were rigging games for the Cowboys would have a lot more to show for it over the past three decades. They have none. And let's like expand that to every single sport. Like, I know that people say, oh, well, NBA refs rig games for XYZ. Well, then why did the San Antonio Spurs have an unbelievable run for 20 years? Like, bad ref rigging there, buddy. If there's any bias, it's toward longer series, by the way, in those other sports that don't have a finite number of games like the NFL does. I think that what we saw on Saturday, and the NFL hates when the refs are the story, hates it. And if anything, Brad Allen's statement that the Lions were lying is only going to make things worse. It's going to go into this week. And players are going to be asked about it, and it's going to be some back and forth, and at least one Lions player will go off message and kind of probably go at the referees and kind of their confusion. And listen, like, we know what happened. It's the most obvious thing in the world what happened, which is that the Lions were trying to confuse the Cowboys, and they confused the refs too, which is not hard to do if you watch NFL referees. So I don't view it as a conspiracy. I view it as just an officiating crew that makes a bunch of mistakes, making one more. Like, I saw the phrase from a couple of people, including I think Jeff Schwartz and Nate Tice, that Brad Allen was on autopilot. And that's probably a good way to put it. He was not assessing the situation with the rigor that you should have when it's the fourth quarter of a huge NFC game. I don't think there's a fix except better refs. Like, in that situation, Eye in the Sky, which I've called for before, wouldn't have helped there. They could not have Zapruder filmed that from a bunch of different angles that quickly. That wouldn't be a 5-second fix. The only fix is to get better refs. And I think the report already came out that Adam Schefter said that crew will likely not make the playoffs. That's a good start. These are the best refs in the world. They are not in any way conspiratorial. This was just, like, let's do Occam's razor here. The simplest explanation is usually the best. This was one of the worst crews, acting like one of the worst crews. And I hate it for the Lions. I think that in a season in which we're celebrating all the Detroit football can be, to have this hanging over their head, like, they'll move on. Like, Dan Campbell's a really good coach. That roster is really good. Like, I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl here. I don't think they're capable of that, but I think they're capable of winning a playoff game. And I also think that it's the type of team that's not going to whine about this for a long time. They're not. And unless something wild happens where home field or the one seed, which could have been in play here, if that becomes the determining factor, you know, a 2-point loss or something on the road, we can talk about it, but I think they'll get over it. But the refs are not corrupt. They're just bad. If they were corrupt, the Dallas Cowboys would have won a hell of a lot more than just last night. Like, the Packers probably would never win a game. Small market. Like there's no, like, people are like, oh, it's rigged for ratings. Why does it have to be rigged for ratings? Do you ever look at NFL ratings? They're unbelievable. The NFL can do whatever they want. If they rigged it for ratings, like, they probably hurt the ratings. That the ratings are unbelievable now. They just own every single window they ever do. So no, nothing is rigged, just bad. All right. Another quick one to get to before I get to my substantial point. So David Tepper, Panthers owner, worst owner in the league, filmed throwing a drink on Jaguars fans. And this was in Jacksonville. I'm from Florida. I will tell you, throwing a drink in Florida, just part of our local culture. It's what we do. A lot of throwing drinks. But David Tepper's not allowed to do that. I think there'll be a, and I saw some wild takes about like, oh, Goodell's going to drop the hammer on Tepper, whatever. He is not. That will not be happening. First of all, yeah, you shouldn't do this, but this is not the end of the world. I think David Tepper has embarrassed himself in a lot worse ways than just this. And the owners have done this before. I mean, Bud Adams flicked off fans. We've had this sort of thing in the past, never a drink being thrown. We've seen this kind of thing before. Owners run the league. They get a lot of leeway. And I think when Robert Kraft, there was a lack of punishment there a couple of years ago. And I think people brought out that quote, people saying, well, the owners have a higher standard than the players do. That's something people say, but it's not true. That's just not how business works at all. Owners run the league, and people are like, well, what if this is a player? Well, again, it's not. So if I had to guess what was going to happen, 1 week left in the season, maybe some sort of unofficial or official 1 week punishment for week 18, tell them to stay home, tell a reporter about it if it's not official. And like big Dom there for a week where they're just like, all right, just stay home for the rest of the season. You're good. You don't have to worry about the Panthers playoff game. So that's all set. So just remove them from that. I don't see a big hammer being thrown. I think, listen, this is like number five of the most embarrassing things David Tepper's done in the last 18 months. And it shows you, and then people were bringing up stories, New York Mag and a couple other places. Basically, he's said he has kind of a competitive temper. I'm not surprised by this. And there's probably a reality to Tepper that has seeping in. It is seeped in. It could not be further in him, which is that he's not nearly as good at this as he thought he was going to be. And every owner thinks they're going to be amazing at it. And I saw Patrick Doherty say this earlier. We're like, Tepper sits around, makes billions of dollars moving money around spreadsheets, and then all of a sudden he gets here, he's the alpha male. Well, guess what, buddy? You got shut out by CJ Beathard. And you're so used to being king of every room you're in, and then you get into the NFL owners meetings in Palm Beach or Phoenix or Orlando or whatever, and nobody respects you in that way because you hired Matt Rhule, had to pay out. Next year you hired Frank Reich, had to pay out. Can't get anything going. And I think there's always been, and somebody said this about some rich owners a couple of years ago, and it stuck with me. Somebody was just kind of gossiping to me. They'd be like, I think that these guys, and listen, in 99% of things within NFL ownership is still about money. So no, it's not like people are like, well, nobody respects you even though you have $11 billion. No. There's a lot of respect that comes with that. But you're in these rooms and you're being judged on more than that. You're being judged on, did you win the Super Bowl? Did you hire the best GM in football? Do you have the last 20 years, of sustained success? And you're getting into people without money can be on an even playing field with people with money. And that's an adjustment. That's not a Tepper specific thing. That's an adjustment every billionaire gets to make. Now, every single owner is a billionaire many times over that comes in the league. First of all, they're billionaires because they own the team. That's first of all. I'm saying anybody who comes in the league now is rich beyond anyone's wildest imagination. And that means a couple of things. They're changing the structure of the league because they can afford $30 million buyouts, $40 million buyouts. They can afford, if they wanted to, massive guaranteed contracts for quarterbacks, massive guaranteed contracts if they wanted to, large contracts. There used to be cash flow issues with teams. That's not really happening anymore. When you talk about guaranteed money in deals, not fully guaranteed. I'm talking about massive guarantees that would require some cash on hand. That's not happening anymore. There's no such thing as a broke owner anymore. And even the ones we think are broke, the assets are so large that they're not. And so someone like Tepper comes in and I think he thinks he can change it a little more than he actually can. And he thinks he can dominate a little bit more than he can. And you see it all get funneled into one thing, which is throwing a drink in Jacksonville. Buddy, we've all been there. All right, so let's get to the football part of it. So the AFC seeds that are currently locked in, there's only two. Number one seed Ravens, number five seed Browns. I put this out today as a group exercise, group project, guys. And you guys, as normal, through most of my academic career, this held, which is that during group project, I didn't do any of the work. You guys, my comrades did, and I took the grade. The question was simple. Who do you trust the most? And the way I did it was, I said, let's play a game. There are four teams you get to pick from. If one of those four teams wins the Super Bowl, you get to double your life savings. If any other team in the NFL wins a Super Bowl, you lose everything. And I was really surprised. So first of all, everybody had the Ravens, everybody had the Niners. I was really surprised at the hierarchy from there. A lot of people had the Cleveland Browns ahead of the Dolphins, Cowboys, Bills, Chiefs. Chiefs being the most surprising, although as the course of the day wore on, I don't blame the anti-Chiefs people. My list would likely be Ravens, Niners, Cowboys, Chiefs. Reason being, the Dolphins, as recently as 3 weeks ago, I thought that they had the pole position. Now, all of a sudden, they lose today, obviously. Xavier Howard hurt. Bradley Chubb hurt. And the pass rush depth, the defense is going to be good enough to, I mean, in the AFC, the Dolphins are the best passing offense, and it's not even close. They're closer to the Niners than they are the third place team in the NFL, but which I believe is the Texans of all people. But you didn't know that. The Texans, by yards per attempt, are the third best team in the NFL this year. CJ Stroud is really good. But I thought the Dolphins, if they came in at maybe better form, fuller strength, a little healthier, I thought they could get over the loss of Jalen Phillips. But if more defenders are getting hurt, that just doesn't get them on the level. A lot of Bills people. I'd rather take the Chiefs, given what I've seen over the past couple of years. And also just like the Bills, I mean, like, it's, a lot of times if a team tells, and this is the old thing, Bill Parcells said many times, your record says you are, heard that a million times. But the other one, which is, if a team tells you what they are, believe it. I think we look for reasons to say, okay, they're turning the corner. If a team shows you that, and I'm going to contradict myself in a second here, if a team shows you that they're a bottom half of the playoff bracket team, there's normally not a run in them. Now, there are exceptions, and we've talked about this before, but like, I thought James Cook coming in and shaking things up was going to be a game changer. The next week, they go out and they get spanked and nothing happens there. So that run that maybe I thought they were going to go on, I don't know if it's developing as much. Now, the Chiefs, maybe it's a brand thing. Maybe it's a brand name thing. Maybe it's a legacy thing. I cannot remove them from the teams I trust the most list. Even though, I don't even know where to begin. First of all, I do know where to begin. Mahomes still throwing to MVS after all he's done. And the highest drop rate in the league for someone who throws very catchable, easy balls. I mean, Mahomes should win Walter Payton Man of the Year for this. Like, it's who's doing more charity work right now than Patrick Mahomes trying to save MVS's career and give him that chance? Because all it takes is one touchdown for him to turn the narrative of his entire career. That's all it takes. And I mean, like, you know, someone like, I'm just, J.D. Drew with the Red Sox, remember that awful contract? And then he hits a grand slam in the World Series. Everybody forgets about it. But this is still MVS getting so many snaps, still within the accepted margin of error. When they were bringing pressure against Jake Browning on Sunday, Romo, while the sack was happening, said, "This is why the Chiefs can still win the Super Bowl." And I agree with them. That defense plus Mahomes plus Andy Reid can get you there. Now, there are real concerns that I have. Number one is that they're just not as aggressive. Saw a couple people say, you know, fourth and one, kicking the field goal, chance to win the game, and they just go conservative. That wouldn't have happened 3 years ago. They would have run a sprint right option. Hell, they did it with Chad Henne a couple years ago. You know, there was that thing last week, I think it was, that Kyle Shanahan never comes back in the fourth quarter where they're down eight. Well, nobody does. Only Mahomes does. They used to be able to score in chunks. They used to be able to score in bursts. They can't do that anymore. They've gotten more conservative because they have to be. They are no longer a juggernaut. This is the first time in Mahomes' career there's a touchdown percentage under 5%. Biggest INT percentage of his career. Success rate way down. He's not the same quarterback in this offense with the pieces around him because he doesn't have the most efficient supporting cast. Travis Kelce is taking a dip in form and the receivers are gas station attendants. He's throwing shorter versus the sticks. And even the easy stuff that he's so good at, he's being let down by his teammates. Mitch Schwartz said the other day, or today rather, that Patrick was literally saying, watch the nickel. And nobody watched the nickel. Nickel blitzed, and Patrick goes down. Like, I don't know. He's trying really hard. He's really good at this, and he's being let down by a supporting cast. But I can't sit here and say Mahomes. I said this after the Super Bowl last year. Mahomes' floor with Andy Reid should be the AFC Championship game. Just like the New England Patriots were more years than not in the AFC title game, in the Final Four, and then whatever happens, happens. That should be the expectation. Even the defense is improved, the supporting cast is worse on offense. I think that's a fair trade. I still have that expectation. I will never treat Patrick Mahomes like an underdog. He's too good for that. So he's on my list. But I want to focus on the Ravens here because they were more or less unanimous. And I got like 200 responses on this, whether it's on quote tweet or in replies. And I'm starting to think about something with Mahomes because it relates to the Chiefs. Because I think at his peak, nobody's better than Mahomes. I don't think it's possible. Like physically, I don't think it's possible. But I think number two in the what they look like at their peak, I think it's Lamar Jackson. So first of all, Lamar Jackson is the MVP. This debate is over. The MVP award, more times than not, ends up like the BCS, the old BCS. You know, works itself out. College football playoff, works itself out. Everything is revealed to you. But I'm stunned by a couple of pieces of information that I saw on Sunday. Number one, the most wins by 14 or more points versus teams with a winning record in NFL history. 2023 Ravens have seven. That is best all time, tied with 2014 Patriots. They won the Super Bowl. And then after that is the 1925 Pottsville Maroons. I am not ashamed to say I spent about an hour in a 1925 Pottsville Maroons Wikipedia hole. On their schedule was a Notre Dame alumni all-star team. And then, like, I think an Atlantic City team was on there. And then the Packers. Packers were on their schedule. But not a lot of teams that you've heard of. Coached by a guy named Dick Roch. Absolutely not joking. That was the guy's name. But the reason I think they're blowing out really good teams is related to the next thing, which is that, and this is via Chase Stewart, Lamar Jackson versus Miami today had a perfect passer rating, four touchdowns, three incompletions. So more touchdowns than incompletions and a perfect passer rating. Last quarterback to do that, Lamar Jackson against Cincinnati 4 years ago. Last quarterback to do that before that, you guessed it, Lamar Jackson versus Miami in 2019. So the last three instances of a perfect passer rating, four touchdowns, and then fewer incompletions and touchdowns, Lamar Jackson all the way down. When he is at his best, you cannot stop it. The only person who can match him in that department is Mahomes, and Mahomes is not going to do it this year. Guess what? Turns out receivers matter. And Zay Flowers, Odell Beckham. By the way, Odell Beckham says the best team he's ever played on. And I don't know if he's a, I don't know Odell enough to know if he's just trying to hype up his guys, but that's a pretty significant statement. But they upgraded the skill guys, and Todd Monk and the OC trust Lamar Jackson. After the game, he said, Lamar said Monken is letting him be a decision maker. The Odell catch down the right sideline, which was incredible. That was checked in, man coverage, and he just wanted Odell the chance to go grab it. And he did, and the Dolphins challenged, and it was weird. But Lamar talked about how great it is to have the freedom to go see things on the field and go do it after that. The Ravens are third in interception percentage, low interception percentage, so that's a good thing. Fifth in yards per attempt, which, as I've told you, I consider the most important metric. Then you add in what Lamar can do as a runner, the way he just stretches defense in general. I'm seeing something, and I think, didn't I say he was going to win the MVP and could win the Super Bowl in like week three on this podcast? We're seeing something. We're seeing the rebirth of something that I think anybody who's been around it knows how special he could have been every single year. And there were a couple of reasons, whether that was health, whether that's supporting cast, we just did not see it. And I'm not going to ding Greg Roman for a lot of that. I think at the end that got stale, but I do think he built the original offense that was so good around him. But this guy is unbelievable. And I always go back to something. If you guys remember the viral stop start goal line touchdown he had in high school, he was a junior in high school. I called the opposing coach of that team, of that game. His name was Don Hanna. And he told me Lamar embarrassed him so much, that team so much, that he looked in the mirror and said, am I not doing something right? Am I not the coach I thought I was? Am I not putting my guys in position to succeed? We got Lamar Jackson from Boynton Beach. He's running all over, so we can't stop him. It had been two games they played him in, and both times Lamar Jackson embarrassed all 11 guys in the defense. It's a little bit of a funk. So then, a couple years later, turns on the TV, sees Florida State can't handle Lamar Jackson. Clemson can't handle Lamar Jackson. A couple years after that, Miami Dolphins cannot handle Lamar Jackson. Cincinnati Bengals cannot handle Lamar Jackson. What's the through line when Lamar Jackson is playing his best? No one can handle him. And that's what we're seeing now. That's why it doesn't matter if you're a good team. Lamar Jackson can beat you. There are things he can do on a football field that, and I'm not saying he's had a perfect career, but what I am saying is that when he is doing the things that he's capable of, it's quite literally impossible to defend. When his MVP year, he crossed the line of scrimmage faster than any player in football, and he's the most efficient passer in football. What do you do as a defender on that? Because there are ways, you know, I think a lot about the first playoff game I ever played, and it was the Chargers, and they essentially just threw out a bunch of DBs. And they had like eight DBs in the field the entire time. Okay, well, the offense has evolved, and that's probably not going to work anymore. He played really poorly in his first playoff game. But that's not going to work anymore. He's evolved to be a more complete player, just like any player is. And I feel like sometimes, and this is something I've said many times, I feel like some players are not afforded the ability to evolve as players by the media, by the fans, and the way that others are. And I feel like Lamar, there were too many proclamations over the past 3 years, in the interim since his MVP season, for a guy who was still really young, and the discourse around him in free agency was wild. And now the discourse and the backlash to the backlash about free agency, I don't understand it. Here's what I know. Lamar Jackson was available to be contacted about contract offers, and the only, if you believe the reports, the only teams that did it were half-hearted and never made a serious pursuit. They just checked in. And now I'm wondering, with Atlanta, is Lamar Jackson going to cost that regime their jobs? And we have to figure out what happened behind the scenes. But if the Falcons actually said, we don't need Lamar Jackson, and Arthur Blank said, okay, then that might cost people their jobs. If we're flipping it and Arthur Blank is the one who said, no, that's a different conversation. But that's Lamar Jackson in 2023. And I don't think, by the way, we might record into 2024. That's how late we record this show. But I don't see any reason that this would be a one-year spike. I don't. If we know he needs these types of receivers, Zay Flowers is a rookie. The line is good. Like, I don't, Ryan Stanley's been bad, but even that hasn't prevented any of this. This could be a very interesting AFC the next couple of years. Very, very interesting. Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, obviously Mahomes. That situation will only get better as they figure out what kind of receiver he needs, which is a guy with the pulse. That's what receiver he needs, a guy who doesn't. And I gotta ask somebody in Kansas City about this. There's no receiver version of Joe Flacco for the Chiefs to go out and sign who can just catch the damn ball. I'm all for trusting and believing people, but this is ridiculous. Anyway, so that's where I'm at with the first two teams that I trust. I trust the Ravens a hell of a lot more than I trust the Chiefs, but I'm not removing the Chiefs. The Cowboys, I still think that they have the capability to play as complete a game as the Niners. I've just seen it more and more. I've seen it an inconsistency more and more as we go. They should have lost that game on Saturday night. And then the Browns, briefly on that, this has been a miracle run. And I'm so happy for Browns fans that they get this. I'm so happy for Joe Flacco that he gets to come off the couch. I will say, just to defend the Jets here for a second, everybody's like, well, the Jets, you know, should have made a call. They should have had him in there. First of all, he would not have been like this on the Jets. Second of all, one thing you need to understand if you're a Jets fan is the thing you heard about a championship-level defense, not correct. The championship-level defense was in Cleveland. Cleveland had the infrastructure for this. The Jets didn't. Now, Aaron Rodgers is a hell of a lot better than Joe Flacco, and I've defended the Jets a bunch and said that Aaron Rodgers should get the chance to patch the holes that he himself created. I'm good with that. This year was an absolute mulligan. The worst thing that's ever happened to a fan base happened to the Jets, so that's fine. But if I were to rank the top 10 worst things that ever happened to a fan base, the Browns have a hell of a lot of them. So I'm glad they're getting rewarded on this. That's where I'm at. All right, and then last thing. I have the phrase Big Ten in my notes. I have no idea why. I have no idea why I wrote down Big Ten earlier this afternoon. I will not be talking about the Big Ten, despite what's in my notes. The Eagles legitimately stink. And I said their season was over a couple weeks ago, and I can only – Miles, one of our producers, I sent him a joking text. Was I too soft on them when I said the season was over? It's obvious. So first of all, part of the problem is you can't hone in on one thing, but the answers are also obvious. Like, even though, like, I was reading the beat writers tonight, and it was like, well, it's not just the defense, also miscues on offense. Like, it's just bad. They whiffed on both coordinator hirings. And I don't, you know, people are coming at Jalen Hurts. I do not think Jalen Hurts is your biggest issue right now. And by the way, some people, like the contract stuff, like, let me tell you something. First of all, Jalen Hurts' contract is fine. Second of all, the Eagles can get, even if it was some sort of mistake down the road, the Eagles got out of Carson Wentz's deal just fine. Just fine. And they recovered. Like, they're not the Jets. They're not going to compound mistakes for a decade. They've shown that anything, I'm not even talking about Jalen Hurts anything, any mistake they made can be easily solved. Howie Roseman got demoted for Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly cut all the good players, had two good seasons, then Howie Roseman came back, won the Super Bowl. They're good. They're fine. Infrastructure's good. Eagles have 41 quarterback sacks after having 70 in 2022. Starts with that. If you cannot get to the quarterback, and I thought Jalen Carter was going to change everything about that defense. And he's been good, but he has not. That defense, and again, it's like the Bill Barnwell always brings up the Bill James line about how you always blame the best players in the team for not producing when a team loses. I'm not going to blame Jalen Carter on that because the linebackers and the safeties have been significantly worse. I just thought that they'd be closer to that 70 number. I know that was historic, but I also thought that this level of talent was vaguely historic. So I'm surprised by this. I keep thinking what an end to an era this could be. Elliot Shore Parks made the point earlier tonight, today, that the Eagles aren't going to play a home playoff game, likely. Probably go to a 5 seed. So today could have been the last home game for Jason Kelce, Brandon Graham, and Fletcher Cox. And it might be a couple of leaner years in the NFC. It might be. Because it's a very deep conference. We'll see what happens with the Niners here. There's a couple teams I expect to get better. But you can't lose to the Cardinals at all. And you certainly can't lose like that. The Cardinals didn't punt on Sunday. The Cardinals had a bunch of guys just running the ball down their throats. And I think there were a lot of kind of red check engine lights. Although my check engine light is yellow. There's a bunch of lights, check engine lights, after the Niners game, where everybody says, all right, well, they don't have the horses to be physical with some of these teams. But again, even if they weren't soft, they'd still be losing a bunch of games. And I don't think they're the softest team in the league or anything. I'm just saying that it just felt like the team that wanted to break tackles in San Francisco and play a physical style of offense, it felt like the Eagles had no answer to that. And I don't believe that as normal with their identity. I think that's a roster thing right now. I think more often than not, they understand the physical tough teams and the Lions win football games. They understand that. It's just not translating right now. The Eagles have gone 1-4 over the last 5 games after a 10-1 start. And I think pretty much everybody's saying it's breakdowns in the red zone, breakdowns in high leverage downs, communication. Obviously, they demote Sean Desai, promote Matt Patricia. To use an internet phrase, it's never been more over. Because I already said the season is over. It's never been more over. And I don't even, at this point, I would never say you would want to play the Eagles in the first round, but I would certainly not be scared. I would not be reacting like Michigan when they had to play Alabama in the playoff and go, oh, geez, wish we had Florida State. Wouldn't be doing that for the Eagles right now. I'm good on playing the Eagles if I'm a top NFC.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, use the code OMAHAFULL. And then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, you keep those winnings. But if you lose, you get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and up only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 wager only. Must wager with eligible promo code BET. Amount of qualifying wager return only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Hannah's, New Orleans. Maine, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-888-427-426-2537, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Flynn, we have one listener question.
We do. We got an email from Peter Macaluso. Peter says, now that he's going to be cut, do you think Russ signs a modest deal in the offseason with a chance to win a job? Or do you think he waits around and sees if a contender loses their QB a la Joe Flacco this year? Feels like a way to maintain his body and increase his rep.
All right, so great question, Peter. Future of Russell Wilson. I've thought about this all week. So couple ways he can go here. And there's always a danger when you get to be an older quarterback. One wrong move and you're branded a joke because you lose a quarterback competition. Like, I'll give you a great example. Kurt Warner goes in to be the Giants quarterback, loses his job eventually to Eli Manning. And then it kind of like, all right, well, that's the end of that. And then he goes to Arizona, has to reinvent himself and makes another Super Bowl. You can temporarily get branded something other than what you are if you choose the wrong destination. I think Russell Wilson's been okay this year. I think he's earned a starting job somewhere. It's going to be a lower tier thing than, and it's going to be for less money, obviously. But, and also, by the way, I'm surprised that the Broncos did what they did as far as asking him to waive the guarantees and stuff. That just seems, the union is involved. I'm surprised they were that overt. And it was funny because I remember years ago, I asked a GM, I said, we're talking about the tracking data. And I said, would you ever, this is like early on in the tracking data. I said, would you ever like tell a guy to take a pay cut because he used to run, you know, let's say he has the same receiving numbers. He's running 21 miles per hour and the next year he's running 19. Would you go to him and say, hey man, you're really struggling on this, even though you got the same amount of yardage. That's a sign of decline. Take a pay cut. And the guy was like, no, we're never that. First of all, they wouldn't. I think that it might be illegal to do that. But also they're like, we're never that overt when we're telling guys to take a pay cut because we only get in trouble. We're just kind of like, hey, here's your new deal. We're never going to be like, here's your case. Here's the case that you suck. They never do that. And so I was a little bit surprised they literally said, waive your injury guarantees or else we're going to bench you. Anyway. So what are the options here? Well, we have to figure out who's going to have a top pick. So that today changes a little bit of that because the Cardinals win, obviously. And that means that the New England Patriots, move up into third place in the draft and the Commanders move up to second. I don't think the Commanders were ever really an option for Russell Wilson, but obviously if they're getting Drake May, that removes it. Couple of interesting places here. Okay. Number one will be Pittsburgh. That was bandied about on Sunday by a couple of people. I think that'd be interesting. They've got a pretty good roster. If they think he can play, he'd be better than the current options. I'll say that. Would he be better than most folks on the New York Giants right now, or all the quarterbacks? I think he would be. I think the New York Giants would be a good fit, and the New York Giants are going to be picking fifth right now. Which, and I know Daniel Jones is going to be really expensive, but they can't waste a season next year if they don't believe Daniel Jones is the guy. So, what you bring up, see if he'll take a kind of a medium level deal to compete. I don't know. Maybe the Giants don't want to pursue that path. Maybe Brian Daboll wants to roll with his guys, or they want to draft a young guy, like a kind of a second wave guy, second apron guy, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, Jaden Daniels something like that at five. I don't know. I don't know what they want to do. I literally do not know. They are such a black hole of football right now. Nothing they do makes sense. And so until we figure out what's going on with their quarterback plan, I'm just going to put a pin in that. Atlanta, maybe. Also, a huge part of this is what happened to Justin Fields, because I'd much rather have Justin Fields than Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is the definition of mediocre but knows what he's doing. Justin Fields' ceiling is so much higher. And Justin Fields might be a little more expensive depending on what Russell Wilson's market is. But if I'm Atlanta, I'd much rather have Justin Fields if Chicago wants to move off of him. I think it's becoming more and more and more clear that with DJ Moore, with some of the pieces there, the momentum that the Bears have, I think as long as you can sucker a team in, and I think, by the way, Washington being number two is a really bad thing for this, because I think they needed Washington to be third or fourth and try to move up and pay four first-round picks for Caleb Williams or whatever. If there's a team that's desperate enough to do it, I think you keep Justin Fields and auction off the pick. My concern is that there's just not enough suckers right now. The reason you have the pick is because the most desperate team in football already gave you a pick. Already gave you a package like that. So it might be hard to get the Godfather offer, but that's just something to monitor. What happens to Kirk Cousins? Because that'll determine something. Kind of who wins that? What happens in Minnesota? People are saying New England. I don't know. It depends who the quarterback is. Excuse me, the coach. And what they want to do. Do they want to get a young quarterback in? I just think there's a lot of unanswered questions about New England, to the point that I'm not going to throw them out there yet. The market's not going to be great. And to answer Peter's question, this was Peter's initial question. Do you sign somewhere? Or do you try to be Joe Flacco? I think you sign somewhere because you become a forgotten man and your reputation is not so high. You're not going to be Roger Clemens in the box. Remember that? Is anyone who likes baseball under 30 and listens to podcasts? Probably not. But when I was a kid, Roger Clemens came back midway through the season, signed a $1 trillion deal with the Yankees, and everybody went nuts. He announced it during a game. You're not Roger Clemens. So you have to fight for your place in this league. Also, what happened that, like, Joe Flacco wasn't even Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco was the fourth option for the Browns. It wasn't like they were like, all right, we got to call Flacco. They had very low expectations for Joe Flacco. So it wouldn't even be Flacco. It would become something completely different. It would be coming in as a closer for a team. And Russell Wilson's not good enough to do that. He's got to stake out a place for himself in this league, go to camp, go to OTAs, whatever. Don't have his own office. He's got to fight for a place in football. All right, we'll be back on probably Tuesday afternoon. We'll be able to post the episode, depending, or Wednesday morning at the latest. Nick Wright, our buddy. Known him for a long time. I'm really excited about this. We'll also be back, obviously, on our normal schedule. So we'll have an episode on Friday as well, previewing the week ahead, some of the nuts and bolts football stuff. This has been This is Football. Thank you to Flynn and Miles. See you this week. Happy New Year.